From the Centre for Public Christianity, you're listening to Life and Faith. I'm Natasha Moore. Her family had been Catholics ever since the Portuguese and their progeny, crosses held up like cockroach spray, blitzed the Goan 16th century. I'm reading from a new book called The Permanent Resident by Rowana Gonsalves. This character comes from Goa in India, from the Catholic community there. She's living in Australia and grappling with the fact that she's still somehow a part of the caste system, even halfway, well, a quarter of the way around the world. The caste system, like matter, could never be destroyed, Rowana writes. It just changed form and hiding places, cropping up in matrimonial columns and private email lists, and led to her specifically marrying a Goan Brahmin. The Permanent Resident is Gonsalves's first book. It's a collection of short stories that captures some of the light and shade of the migrant experience in Australia. It's full of colour and humour. One reviewer has described her writing as full of mischief. The question people always kind of want to ask writers is this your life? Is your fiction really about you and about people you know? Writers tend not to like that question very much. But Simon and I did start out by asking Rowana about her own identity as a migrant. She's from Goa and from a Catholic background, and how the complexities of that experience have shaped her, both personally and as a writer.
It's completely central. I came here 18 years ago as an international student. Mm-hmm. And so I grew up in India, and now I have Australian citizenship. And I feel like I'm Indian and Australian. I don't feel like I must choose. Maybe that's not a very sensible way to think. But yeah, and so I feel like I am a migrant, but I also feel at home now.
Do you feel that that's been overall a positive experience, quite a mixed one?
It's been completely mixed, of course, as life is. But of course, bearing in mind that I am a woman in a patriarchal society, I'm a brown woman in a white society, and I'm a poor woman in an affluent first world society. So,
yep,
but having
that's
said
a lot
that,
of components.
Yes, I also speak English very fluently. And so that's a huge privilege. I'm highly educated, another huge privilege. And I grew up in the Catholic faith. And so that allows me to completely tap into the, I guess, cultural ethos of, you know, white Australia, basically. So that, I think, has also been a huge advantage, I have to admit.
Yeah. And in terms of shaping you as a writer?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, completely, because my stories are, all my characters are women who are of Goan Catholic background. So they might not be practicing Catholics, but culturally they're very Catholic. And so there are lots of biblical allusions mm-hmm. and also jokes about various different things, but very much written from Catholic perspective.
I can't imagine how there's anything funny about any of that.
yeah. Nothing funny about Catholicism.
Now, you said you're not a very good migrant. What did you mean by that?
I meant that usually migrants are expected and expect themselves to, you know, you come here, you have to be grateful that you have, you're in this wonderful country, which is so different from what you left. And so that expectation of gratefulness is often, I guess, translated as putting your head down, earning enough money to buy a big house and, you know, just not, you're being ungrateful if you protest.
Yeah, there's certain expectations that come with this identification.
Yes.
These stories that you've written really have a kind of richness, and they reflect the complexity of the experience that you've just described. I guess that was a big part of what you're trying to do.
Yes, very much so, because the minute you put a person on a pedestal, you're saying they're not, you know, you don't want to engage with them at a human level, and I didn't want to do that. I wanted to actually unpick the various complexities of Indian communities themselves, not just the simple, you know, bad white person, good brown person, but it's the various complexities of being an outsider in a new place.
There's another reason why Rowana felt compelled to tell these particular stories. She tells us that she wrote things reflecting her own experience, not because she didn't feel able to write about something completely different, but because as a migrant, an Indian and a woman, she saw herself as missing from the Australian imaginary.
You know, Australia is imagined as very white. So I just wanted to see more people like myself. Of course, lots has been written, but not enough. And I wanted to add to that tradition of writing about the reality of Australian life, really. historically, there have been lots of cultures whose stories have been taken and manipulated and told by other people. So that idea of self-representation in the arts, in literature, which I think is important, which I think of as a selfie, a literary selfie of a country. We don't see, or rather, we don't hear as many stories about the diversity of Australian life as we should. You know, our literature, our arts are not as diverse as our streets and our schools and our playgrounds and our offices.
How would you describe what Goan Catholicism is, and has that identity changed over time?
So that's a product of colonization by the Portuguese for hundreds of years. And my grandparents come from a part of India that was colonized by the Portuguese. And so a lot of people in India who have Portuguese surnames, you kind of assume that they're coming from Goa and Mangalore and places like Bombay that were formerly colonized by the Portuguese. That sense of being of the Catholic faith for centuries, not just, you know, one generation, but many, many centuries. That saying that you can take the person out of the church, but you can't take the church out of the person, is very true, because you're just steeped in that, you know, the whole Catholic, the rituals and the stories, etc. So I guess more than religious, it's more cultural as well.
When Rowena says Goan Catholicism is a product of Portuguese colonization, that's quite a complicated thing. Christianity has had a very long and at times extremely fraught history in India, but Christians, mostly Catholics, are still one of the largest religious groups, with Hindus being the majority, in Goa.
So religion, like languages, I suppose, were always imposed through violence. There was terrible violence that went on. But over the centuries, certain groups and certain communities made that religion their own. So Catholicism is also an Indian religion now, just as English is an Indian language. And some argue that Portuguese is also an Indian language, because, you know, there are lots of people who speak Portuguese in India, which is not at all to excuse colonization or to make any, I guess, or to justify it in any way. But of course, all of this was born out of violence. Over the centuries, things have changed. And, you know, a lot of the freedom struggles in India began in Goa. A lot of the intellectual contribution that India has made to the world started in Goa. So the first printing press accidentally landed in Goa in 1556. First printing press in India landed in Goa. The first medical college in Asia is in Goa. And of course, that's all because of the Portuguese. But you know, those, I guess, big movements of history have been extremely violent and extremely oppressive. Today, they play out in different ways.
Can you explain a bit about the caste system, how that works and in what form it exists today?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I don't claim to be an expert in it. And that me saying that itself is something that reveals my privilege, because if you are of a lower caste, you can't but know what caste you are, because you're constantly reminded. And for someone to say, "I don't know what my caste is," like, of course you don't know, because you haven't had to feel the oppressions.
Yeah,
to
away.
Say that, yep. I don't know. Yeah. So I think what happened was the lower castes saw Christianity as a way out of an oppressive system. So that's one kind of group of people that converted to Christianity and Catholicism, because that was the promise that it promised equality.
Yes, yeah. It's offering a vision of humanity that's very different from that very strictly hierarchical one.
Right? Yes, absolutely. But of course, religions are made of human beings, right? And so those old enmities, those old ways of thinking, of course, are transferred into these new religions as well. So the caste system works in ways in Catholicism as well. So in Goa, there are, you know, it may not be explicit, and sometimes it is explicit. So the Brahmin Catholics will only marry other Brahmin Catholics. Flatmates sharing a house or a flat with someone with a Dalit would, like, say, "Oh my God, you know how dirty he is? he doesn't even wash his clothes. So that sense of impurity, that sense of being unclean, that's really hard.
Being attached to the particular caste.
Yeah, being attached to that caste is something that, you know, highly educated people even find hard to kind of wash off. Get rid of. Yeah, like water, the caste system always finds its old course.
You're listening to Life and Faith from the Center for Public Christianity. In her book, The Permanent Resident, Rowena Gonsalves sketches an intimate portrait of the Goan Catholic community in Australia, a portrait that's complex and often wry. One character describes them as conservative voters schooled about Australia by strident political campaigning that promises faster growth, higher levels of secrecy, stronger borders. They buy obedient pictures from IKEA and Adairs, choosing them carefully to match the tack and tone of their brick veneer houses on the hemlines of Sydney. According to Gonsalves, being a Goan Catholic is not just a religious, but also a political identity. And of course, a cultural one too.
Everywhere you go in the world, there are Irish pubs, right? What's the equivalent for the Goan overseas community?
The Christmas dance. Uh-huh. Yeah. And the bar at home. So I guess the Goans are like the Irish in some ways, you know, a love of music, a love of storytelling. But then that's true of lots of cultures. Mm. So, yeah, a love of having a good drink once in a while.
So you have the bar at home, the home bar.
The home bar.
With Bombay Sapphire and other things.
With Fainey. Which is like the, it's alcohol made from the cashew fruit, uh-huh, which is grown in Goa.
So Bombay Sapphire is like Foster's.
Bombay Sapphire is like fake Indian. It's like Foster's. Exactly. Yes, it's like Foster's.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for clearing that embarrassing slip up. Now, you talked a bit earlier about the way in which you can come out of that culture, but it sort of stays with you.
Yeah.
What are the ways that your heritage, the faith of the Catholic Church, what are the ways that that has informed your life, or the kind of the rituals of that, the symbolism of that, that stayed with you?
Okay. So one, I guess, concrete example I can think of is I have a rosary hanging on off the mirror of my car. Wow. And if I break hard or I have just avoided, you know, crashing into these parking lot walls that just detach themselves and crash into my car, it's the first instinct is to hold on to that rosary or make the sign of the cross. And then I have to stop myself and say, Rowena, what is wrong with you? Stop it. But it's that sense of like the body doing things that the body has been trained to do for a long time, for centuries. The muscle memory remains from generations.
What about in terms of stories that you might tell? Things like redemption and forgiveness and hopefulness, lots of things that are, I think, are key to the faith.
Yeah, key to the faith, the idea of redemption. Because, of course, in the Hindu religion, the gods die, and a sign that they're gods is that they don't come back, right? If you come back, you're not a god. Mm. But in Christianity, it's the opposite. He came back, and that's why, you know, he's special. He was resurrected. So that idea of redemption, I suppose, going through a trial and then coming out, the hero's journey. For a lot of, I think, Goan Catholics, the faith is something to hold on to in a world where, you know, race and class are oppressions. The faith is an empowering thing. Church again becomes a center of, finding worth. So a lot of Goans will join the choir in the local church. My dad sings at the cathedral choir, actually, here. Not just Goans, but people from a Catholic background in India. You know, join the choir, join St. Vincent de Paul, go and help out in any way you can. So that idea of giving back.
Do Goan Catholics in Australia then feel part of an Australian Catholicism? Do those kind of rituals and beliefs and community participation, do they transcend kind of the cultural specificity?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, and one I actually feel very strongly about, because I feel that when we think of Australian Christianity, we think of it as a white Christianity, when really look at the churches, the vibrant churches are the multicultural churches. They're the ones who are you know, have the most beautiful choirs, who have, you can see faith in action in the churches, in the suburbs that are full of first generation, second generation immigrants from South Asia, from Africa, from Latin America or South America. So that's not coming through when we think of, when we imagine what it means to be a Christian in Australia.
Mm. Are there ways that the Bible or Bible stories pop up in your writing?
Completely. So I grew up with a grandfather who used to, after he retired, go and help out in church every day. Like a lot, he's not unusual. Lots of people do that. And so he would come home and tell us stories from the Bible. He may have read it that day or, of course, known it by heart from being in the church for 80 years. So I grew up with being told Bible stories by people that I loved. And I have, my dad's brother is a Jesuit priest. My mom's brother is a diocesan priest. So I grew up kind of in the church and I guess seeped in the stories of the Bible and stories of, you know, Old Testament, New Testament and all of that. And so I can't, it's not a huge, I mean, it just comes quite naturally for me to allude to those stories and to write, to make analogies that might be biblical or Christian.
Do you worry that people won't get them?
I did worry that people won't get them. I thought this would be a very niche book about Goan women in Sydney of Catholic background. Like, who's going to want to read this stuff? But I have been humbled by the reception. Yeah, I have really been thrilled by people actually finding something in these stories.
From the Centre for Public Christianity, you've been listening to Life and Faith with Natasha Moore and Simon Smart. Rowena Gonsalves appeared at the 2017 Sydney Writers' Festival, and her book, The Permanent Resident, is available from bookstores and online. If you enjoyed this conversation, we have loads more available on our website at publicchristianity.org. Or you can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Just type Life and Faith in the search box to find us. Next week, refugees and an exploration of what it means to welcome the stranger.